Laura Tingle, Chief Political Correspondent for 7:30. Laura, hello.
Jonathan, hello.
After 3 weeks, can I call this a mingle? Is it,
have I... Yes, I will. As long as Philip doesn't get on to us, it'll be fine.
He may be listening. Good evening, dear sir, if you are.
Good evening, Philip.
Joel Fitzgibbon, we may never see his like again.
That's right, we probably won't. Yeah, so Joel Fitzgibbon, I mean, he's been in the Parliament quite a long time. I've got to say I've been in Canberra longer than he has, which is one of those things that makes you feel really old. But 1996, he was but a boy when he arrived, and he's been here a long time and has got increasingly ratty with his own party as the years have gone by. Was always in amongst the mischief on the leadership issues, you'd have to say. And then, of course, in the 2019 election, there was this savage swing against Labor in his seat of Hunter, which is in, you're astonished to know, the Hunter Valley, big coal mining community up there, and big swing to One Nation because of hostility to Bill Shorten and Labor's perceived climate policies. And it wiped out a lot of the fairly substantial personal margin that Joel Fitzgibbon had in the seat and made it pretty marginal from being one of the safest seats in the country. He's obviously been repositioning himself on this issue, but today, perhaps not completely surprisingly, he said that he won't be recontesting.
Well, he told people, did he not, actually at the moment of his election, that he was going to devote himself in this period to correcting the sins of the Labor Party and then not recontest. I mean, it's been a Melbourne-ish farewell.
It has gone on a bit, but he's, he's become the sort of go-to guy if you wanted to write a story about, dissatisfaction with Anthony Albanese or dissatisfaction with Labor's climate policy or whatever. Mm. And I think in the classic way of the Labor Party, he and Anthony Albanese are actually sort of quite good mates on one level, but it was just becoming impossible for Joel Fitzgibbon to possibly maintain a sort of similar position to the rest of the party, brackets, though not that what their actual position is isn't all that clear.
Well, that remains as somewhat unresolved, doesn't it?
It does. It's not, whatever it is, it's not the coalition's policy, which we also don't know. So it's all a mystery.
So much to live for if you're an Australian elector. I mean, he did not much like, he uses the word idealist. Idealist progressives. It says Fitzgibbon are to blame for Labor's long stint in opposition. See, I would have thought that voters actually wouldn't mind a bit of the I word in their politics. I may be wrong.
Oh, well, who knows? I mean, most people tell you that they're not listening to politics these days, so I don't know whether it's idealism they want. I think they want some clear signals about what people stand for, and they've found that increasingly difficult to get.
Competence, perhaps, would they like that?
Competence would be good. A bit of accountability, a bit of honesty, just a few things like that would be good. But yeah, I think, dare one say, leadership, as in people saying, look, this is what I think we should do and you might not like it, but this is why I think we should do it. I think people probably think that would be quite a good thing to do. And the thing with, I think, Joel's not a stupid man at all, and he sort of knows that we've got to do something about climate change, as do his constituents. But it's all about setting out a path for how his community transitions from being reliant on coal mining to something else. And that's what we're sort of lacking on both sides of politics, really, sort of one, an acknowledgement that, we do have to make a transition of, whether it's because of climate change or because coal is very rapidly becoming a stranded asset around the world, you've got to have a transition path out. And neither side seems to be really all that engaged or emboldened to try to sort of explain what that might be.
Well, and this is the funny thing about this, because that, none of that would come as any surprise to anyone working in that sector. You know, if you're working in coal, you would be only too aware, I would imagine,
absolutely.
Of all those things.
We went up to 7:30. We went up to the seat and the Hunter Valley early last year, just before COVID sort of closed everything down. And just talking to people, you know, on the street, in the pubs, all that sort of stuff. That they were very pragmatic about it. They're just saying, look, we know that the time is coming for this to end. We don't necessarily want our kids going down the mines, but we need to know what the alternative is going to be.
Yes.
And nobody's telling us. So
yeah, it's a big challenge. You know, whoever cracks that code, I suspect, politically, is going to be onto something in Queensland, in places like the Hunter. Transitional politics.
It is going to be interesting, Jonathan, because, you know, there's a lot of muttering around about how the moderate coalition MPs, apparently there are still some of those, vaguely talking about increasing the pressure on Scott Morrison to do something more substantial before the Glasgow climate talks in November. Even talk about some of them going to Glasgow, sort of rumours being muttered about around the place, to try to get some sort of breakthrough. But it's hard to believe that that's going to really happen in any effective way, just given that the government seems to have become so, you know, strangled in its capacity to deliver a message about anything much these days.
Christina Keneally is another sign of Labor, I guess, trying to, well, it's not trying to sort of straighten the deck chairs before an election, if deck chairs are appropriate, but to get a few things in order, and pre-selection would be one of them. And she's, well, there's a bit of a split on the right here, is there not, around her Senate spot?
Yeah, the New South Wales right is fighting amongst itself, which is never a very good look. there basically were two people. Deb O'Neill and Christina Keneally, who were both vying for the number one spot on the New South Wales Senate ticket, because the second spot always goes to the left.
To the left. Yeah. Is three an automatic loss? Is three an automatic loss?
It's not automatic, but it's certainly not an automatic win. It's a bit dodge. I'd say the unions had come in behind Deb O'Neill. Christina Keneally was looking like she was going for the third spot. Now, I would have thought this was something that Anthony Albanese probably should have been sort of a bit more involved in trying to sort out. Of course, he was the one of the long run of Labor left assistant secretaries down in the glorious days of Sussex Street, who were sort of locked in their offices and things by all the meanies from the right. So maybe he wasn't going to have much of a say. But it has led to quite a big division in the New South Wales right. The sort of move by a couple of people to by head office, really, to back Christina Keneally into the seat of Fowler. Mm. Now, Chris Hayes, who's a very long-standing member with a lot of regard in his electorate, which has got a very large Vietnamese community, came out and basically said that he wanted a local woman to be his replacement. The non-Chris Hayes right, shall we say, were very filthy about the fact that he'd done this, because they essentially say it's not his place to say who will replace him, but it has caused deep divisions, and it's a really not a good look for Labor, because as Anne Arley, the MP from West Australia, has said, you know, they're basically people who are linguistically, multiculturally in a minority are always put into these marginal seats, and he was the fairly safe seat of Fowler. They had a good candidate, and what do? They shoehorn somebody in because of a factional deal.
Well, they had a good female Vietnamese candidate.
Exactly.
Perhaps the last word on it. It's a shame, according to Joel Fitzgibbon.
Well, I mean, they're all talking in sort of code and dancing between raindrops on this, Jonathan. I mean, they're all sort of saying, oh, you know, isn't it great that we've got two really outstanding candidates for the seat that shows the depth of our talent brackets just before we, you know, we knock them off, push them on their way.
I mean, it has to be said, of course, that Keneally is a very, very good performer and has been very strong through things like estimates and, you know, running some good prosecutions.
Yeah, so she's got a lot of profile, but, I mean, pragmatically, she's been parachuted in to various positions quite a few times in her career, whether it's been into being Premier of New South Wales, into a spot in the Senate. She hasn't sort of necessarily won a lot of things off her own bat. She ran a very good campaign in Bennelong but didn't win it. But, you know, you can't, despite that, sort of say that she isn't, you know, she doesn't give it her all.
Did you watch last night the SBS doco on the Gillard years?
I did watch it. I was actually sent a preview copy a few weeks ago, and the good and bad bit of that was I could every so often just go, I think I'm just going to have to put this on pause for a minute, because it was an incredibly confronting thing, even though I was there through all of that. Because for those people who haven't seen the documentary, it's just archives footage. It's not
Strong Female Lead, it's called.
Yeah, and it's just the story of the way Julia Gillard was treated, really. And to see it through the prism of 2021 makes it all the more shocking. You know, the whole ditch the witch thing. It reminded me a bit of those documentaries about Adam Goods, where, I mean, I'd been oblivious to the fact that there'd been that the attacks on Adam Goods had gone on for so long, because I'm not really into football, and that had the same sort of impact on me, where you're just seeing this Australia at its absolute worst. Now, I was watching all of that stuff in Canberra while it was going on, but it's just to see it all concentrated into an hour or so is really incredibly confronting. And I suppose, Jonathan, one of the things about it is the press gallery, you know, copped heaps because, you know, it didn't see the significance of the misogyny speech. And I suppose my bigger problem, which still continues to this day, is not so much about that speech, and, you know, you can criticise the gallery as much as you like about that. The more significant, really big problem for me is, you know, should we have called out this appalling treatment, you know, more regularly at the beginning? You know, what should we have done about it? And it's still a really relevant question. I noticed Penny Wong was talking about this in Annabelle Crabb's series Misrepresented, and saying the same thing, that and the view from Julia Gillard down was basically, look, we just ignore it, we just get on with it, you know, it's just appalling, and we rise above it.
Well, Julia Gillard responded to it today and said, you know, the past is the past, but we must build a future. It's, you know, a tremendous sort of positivity.
And certainly the view at the time was you just ignored it, but it's still a relevant issue now, you know, with social media now sort of so prominent, whereas it was only just starting to come out then, about trolls and, you know, abuse of women and all those sorts of things. It's still an issue.
Well, in a way, I mean, the Gillard moment was a perfect storm of the beginning of that time in trolling, in social media. I mean, the disconcerting thing about it is that so many people who behaved despicably at that time, people like Alan Jones, still just have a platform and are untouched by it.
Yeah, and it's and when you see them and hear them talking, it is so shocking.
How do you still survive after what you did?
Yeah, and that incredibly, you know, to say it was an ungracious apology he made after he'd been sprung, saying that Julia Gillard's father had probably died of shame.
Yes.
I mean, what an appalling human being. I mean, that's the only thing you can say about it. It was just so awful. But I think we're still stuck in this position. I know that, you know, what do we say about trolls and abuse? We say, well, we just ignore it, or we just mute them or whatever. But it's still such a hard thing,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Laura, thank you. A slightly quietening note on which to end. A remarkable documentary and part of a series of glimpses into Australian culture and life, which I suspect really reward the viewing. So that's, yes, strong female lead, of which, Laura, it could be argued you are one.
Definitely worth looking at.
Thank you. Laura Tingle, Chief Political Correspondent for 7:30.